This is 16.9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. I write about the digital signage business on my blog, 16.9. I celebrate great and intriguing work. I explore and explain new technology, and I filter the industry BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to get beyond the press releases and trade show chatter and hear from some of the most successful, influential, and interesting people in this business. In this episode, I'm chatting with Jeremy Gavin, the founder of ScreenFeed, a Minneapolis company that generates great-looking, ready-made content feeds for digital signage networks. I spoke with Jeremy in Las Vegas at Infocom, and he walked me through how and why he started ScreenFeed and how subscription content attracts viewers and drives recall for digital signage messaging. So Jeremy, tell me about what ScreenFeed is all about. I know, but I'm sure some listeners out there don't.
Yeah, so we think we're about really delivering an audience to screen. Really, the only reason why you get screen feed content is to increase the viewers to your screen or, you know, keep them entertained while they wait. So our content solves a few problems for people, either entertaining an audience, getting them to watch the screen longer, or getting them to watch the screen at all or on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. And why they would work with us is we really have three main value points. One is we license all the content. Everything you get from us is completely licensed, above board. You do need special license to use content in commercial spaces. So we handle that. Second, we bring those assets in that we license and we format the content for the medium. We don't just take a feed that's the same feed for a website and plug it into digital signage. We have a team of designers and developers that create the content into multiple media formats that will work in digital signage. And then we license it on an easy to purchase monthly or annual fee. And we deliver that in a mechanism that works with digital signage software, which we can work with any digital signage software. Found actually that's sometimes the biggest value point that customers have, and they sometimes ask us to bring their content and deliver it to screens because they need something that's easily integrated into their software. So yeah, entertaining an audience with licensed content that's built for the medium and plugs and plays into your digital signage software.
So essentially you're packaging up content that you would get from a news provider like Associated Press or Reuters or from weather feeds, sports feeds and all that stuff, making it visually attractive and relevant and working properly for digital signage, and then an end user would buy it as a subscription, right?
Correct.
Yes. And how do they get it as a subscription? Is like, do they buy like an annual license or?
Yeah, we allow you to pick any term you'd like. You know, mm-hmm. We don't keep anyone in any contracts. We try to make it as easy as possible to use our content. We have free trials for just about all of our content now. So you can go to our website, try it out, get it working. If it works for you, you can pay on a monthly basis, or you could choose quarterly or annually. We sell it directly to end users, but we have a good amount of our sales that go through resellers and partners.
Mm-hmm. And if you got, as you were alluding to, feeds directly from a news provider, an RSS feed, it's unfiltered and you're going to get some headlines that make absolutely no sense at all, and it's just going to show up on the screen making absolutely no sense. So the part of your value proposition is you touch all of it, you look at all of it, and you simplify it so you make it pretty, but it's all going to work. It takes that worry away.
Right. And that's really how we got into the business. I started a company. I had a web development company for a long time.
Since this is in Minneapolis,
yeah. So 1999, I kind of went on my own. I had been doing it for a couple of years out of college for an agency and was dumb enough or smart enough to think, hey, I could do this myself.
And this is when you could charge $75,000 for a website.
Well, that was kind of my starting point. Was I was working for an agency that was doing that, and I mm-hmm. was like, I could do this, you know, for $3,000.
So, yep.
So I actually thought, I kind of felt bad for our customers, so I'm like, I'll go start on my own. And did that for a number of years and had success. I think we did great work. We weren't huge by any means, but we're always looking for something that we could build and sell based on the quality of the work rather than the quantity of hours. You know, mm-hmm. when you're doing the agency thing, it's hours and hours you got to bill. If you want to make more money, you work more hours.
Yeah.
And so we used to sit around and talk about the golden egg, what was going to be this project. And we had a few things that we tried over the years, but at some point, and maybe it's around 2006, a good friend of mine actually was my very first web client, just said, hey, you know, I'm thinking I'm selling out of my business and I want to go do indoor advertising in commercial office buildings. And he modeled that off of, there's a company called AJ Indoor that was around Minneapolis at the time, and mostly just a lot of screens in restrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, you're getting all these corporate customers coming into these commercial office buildings, and you know, people want to advertise them, and it's really expensive to advertise in these trade journals, etc. I said, well, we're doing some touch screens for, you know, building directories. We had just kind of fallen into that. I got a friend from Miracle-Ear call us one day at our web company saying, could you do touchscreen kiosks? And of course, I always say yes.
Sure.
So yes. And I probably got on Yahoo probably at the time to search, how do you do touchscreens? You
know? What are touchscreen kiosks?
Yeah. And so we had been doing some touchscreen stuff, and it was a lot of fun. So I said, yeah, let's do that. And let's the typical model that I heard hundreds of times since then. We'll put up screens and we'll put ads on them and we'll put the screens in for free.
And we'll all get rich.
And we'll all get rich. Literally, I still have the Excel file that had the whole picture. So we built some software, and I always viewed it as just the web on screens. And this was 2006. And so we made some pretty great software. We were so smart, we put in touch screens, which were three times as expensive as any other screen at the time. So with enclosures and all that, but we were tracking like how many ads were interacted with, and you know, you could do all these things. So it was a lot of fun to build. The only problem was my partner, who was supposed to sell ads, sold one. And so I quickly learned, hey, this isn't the business model.
Yeah.
We had the opportunity to expand. Buildings were saying, yeah, you can go ahead. We had opportunity to go into lots of buildings in downtown Minneapolis. But so anyway, during that time, we were building. We're looking, okay, we got to put some news or weather or something to kind of have it play when we don't have ads or when the touchscreen's not being used. And so we first thought, you know, at the time, AccuWeather, who I give credit to, you know, we're selling their weather and selling Associated Press news, but we weren't happy. I wasn't happy with it. It didn't look good. You know, 2006 high definition screens were still kind of cool, and we weren't showing high definition images. And I was like, you know, I want big images. And so we started putting news headlines in, and we had traffic cameras that were just more kind of free from the government. We were showing traffic cameras, you know, day parted with the day, and doing all this work for two buildings. And at the time, like literally editing news every day, it's just, all right, this isn't worth it for this.
Yeah.
But started licensing photos, and we created what we called News and Pictures. And I think it tells a good story about our company. We had to convince somebody. We couldn't convince Associated Press or Getty Images what digital signage was, so they wouldn't license to us, except for $600 an image. You know, we needed 10 or 30 of them a day. So that model didn't work.
That didn't work?
No, I found a great company to work with. We started licensing images. The headlines, to get to your question, was, you know, you'd have prison break in Florida. That's not enough information.
Yeah.
And then you'd try to take the first paragraph, and that's way too much information to read. So, you know, where it would say prison break in Florida, we would license the news and images where we could edit that headline and say 12, you know, inmates escaped, 6 have been captured.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a little story. And, you know, beautiful, not that story, but other stories would have a beautiful full HD image that fills your screen. At the time, that was some innovative design, but it was simply just trying to be simple. So,
yeah.
But the story is there is we're licensing photos that you wouldn't have access to. We're taking the time to manually edit and crop and do all this work. Instead of just for these two buildings, we're going to do it once, and we're going to be able to serve many people. So that just kind of became our model, is where can we add value by taking in assets, creating it great for the medium, and then hopefully making it beautiful and sending it out to the screen. So.
And that's how ScreenFeed got started. Where are you at now in terms of the numbers of clients you have and the range of content that you're producing, number of folks you have working for you, all that stuff?
Yeah, I remember we started, we were at 5 of us in our web design company, and I came in one morning to say, hey, we're going to start this thing. I was going to call it Photocast, and I realized I'd come up with a better name. So we launched it. I remember tweeting, it was probably one of my first tweets, hey, we've launched the service. And then the next morning, we got a response to the tweet, and somebody subscribed and for $15 a month. And I was like, we've made it. So that grew to $500 a month, and it was still sort of the side thing that we're growing. But a couple of years in, you know, we actually going to 2008, I think, was our first DSE that we came to a booth and kind of got the where have you been all my life response from people. So we grew from 5. We're still, there's only, you know, 13 full-time and a couple part-time editors. So our goal is to remain as small as possible while serving as many people. We've got currently just over 1,500 customers And then that powers about 85,000 screens that use our content. So it's grown quite a bit, particularly over the last 3 years. So it's grown significantly.
And you do news, weather, sports, all the traditional feed stuff, but you also do like green screen weather with live broadcasters, and like you're into all kinds of stuff now, right?
Yeah, it's been fun because one of my actually greatest joys starting it is I used to talk to every single customer, and we talk by phone. I don't, but one of us are always talking to each of our customers because we want to learn what their needs are. That's my biggest fear is someone comes to our website and they're looking for something and I wish I knew what they wanted. But yeah, we do weather. One fun project we got into was with Meijer, a big retailer in the Midwest.
Yep.
And they had a need for content for their network, and or they'd have screens for TVs that they're selling. They wanted content on them. And they asked for weather. And at the time, we had regional video weather forecasts. And I'm a big proponent of someone on screen talking so that the audience might listen to someone actually talking to them. But our regions didn't really match up with where their stores were. So we had to add a new region to cover their stores. And I thought, well, if we're going to make a new region, let's make this for them. And so we created the Meijer Country Weather Forecast, where they would talk to the customer saying, hey, here's your Meijer Weather Country Forecast, sponsored by Kraft, you know, and they'd mention things based on the weather. Hey, maybe you want to get some things for a picnic this weekend, etc. So that time, that was our biggest sale that had happened. It's a lot more work to do that, so we had to charge a good amount to make it happen. But we were happy because it was a big sale for us. Our weather partner was happy because we contracted them to do it. Meijer was happy because they were getting ad revenue from Kraft, and Kraft was happy because they had a way to engage customers. So I kind of clicked for me, like, hey, we can add value here if we innovate. And so, yeah, we've kind of been on a growth as far as getting into other types of content, you know, short video shorts, work for lobbies. You know, we've recently added flight information, probably more so in corporate communication. So we're kind of listening to our customers, kind of seeing what their needs are. And
how many content categories do you have now?
Yeah, we have 75 different, I guess, what we call channels that you could purchase. A lot of those, you know, a good number of those 20, 25 will fit into news. But, you know, categories, we really get into, you know, news, weather, infotainment, which is like top five lists or Billboard top 10 or local event information. We added traffic, and I think we do traffic really well. The partner Inrix, both in North America and Europe, we are, you know, we've got into corporate communications, and then last year added social media as well, which is something we hadn't done a lot of, but now that's, we built a dashboard to allow people to do a good job of controlling what that
you can moderate what's coming
is.
Through and
exactly.
filter stuff out. So I'm somebody who's often questioned why they're is news, weather, and sports on digital signage screens in environments where they've driven there, they've had their radio on, they've got their smartphone, they have no end of access to news and weather and sports, and they'll have it fine-tuned to their particular interests. So what's the argument in the age of smartphones for digital signage networks to have content, subscription feed content, interspersed with other marketing messages on the screens? Why do it?
Yeah, well, the only reason you would do it is if it makes sense for your network. You want viewership and you believe that this would get that content. So I'd answer it a couple different ways. One would be, we're involved in a study. I can't name who the bank was, but they did a study on the very question, is this stuff going to help? So they tested a number of stores, hired a company to audit them with, I guess, interviews, exit interviews on these stores. And their results were that their marketing message that, I guess, was shown after the weather, which is what they were testing, was viewed 43% greater than any other marketing message in the playlist. And weather ranked number one. So they found, hey, we add this content, the content following it is going to have a higher recall. So that's the business case for using it. I would tell people often that, one, we should never be all of your playlist, and for half the companies out there, you don't have a need for our content. It should be based on your need. But that would be the case. And I'd say how our content competes with smartphones, we created a piece of content called Destinations, which was a partnership between us and National Geographic. And that partnership allowed us to have access to all of their image and video archive. And to me, it was a wonderful opportunity to create beautiful content, show it on high definition screens, and it's some of the most beautiful images and video that I enjoy. And so to me, I think that's a smartphone buster. It's not some content you're going to get on your screen at that mm-hmm. size. And so if you do content right and well, you can beat the phone. Mm-hmm. Lastly, I guess one more thought is, you know, I was at the Four Winds conference last summer.
And, yeah, I was there.
Okay, yeah. And I thought their CEO really hit home with how, when he told the story of how they use their screens mm-hmm. in their own offices and how people are much more willing to glance and get some information than have to go look it up. Mm-hmm. And I think that applies with digital signage. Even though you can get news and weather, if it's an easy glance, I'll take the easy glance, you know. Mm-hmm. But certainly people should look at, does news and weather make sense? And we think about that all the time, which is why we've added a lot of other types of content, because one, we think it's more interesting ourselves, mm-hmm. it's more creative. So someone should question, hey, do they need it? And but if they do, we think we can be the best provider of it.
Do you do any kind of almost like a discovery exercise with them to say, okay, what are you trying to accomplish? What's your network about? And maybe recommend that this is the kind of content we believe would work well for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. A lot of our customers can come to our website and just purchase and be on their way without mm-hmm. even having to chat with us. But nearly all have a conversation with us because they just have questions. Mm-hmm. And certainly our bigger projects, where it's more key that they're making good decisions, we'll have good conversations about them. First of all, like, what's your goal of the signage? But once you answer some of those other questions, it gets down to, okay, we're going to include this content or not. It gets down to, what's their dwell time? Mm-hmm. And of that dwell time, how much percentage of it do we need to spice it up with our content? So, yeah, we've got a lot of worksheets that we work through that say, okay, this is your playlist. This is what your other messages are that you need to cross. This is content that's going to fit. And sometimes it's, hey, they want the shortest possible content from us. They want something that can play in 10 seconds mm-hmm. so they can get on to the next message. Other cases, when they're in a lobby and they're waiting 40 minutes, they want them to be entertained. They chose to put digital signage in instead of cable, like an automotive service station that
right.
remove cable because they want to control the message. But they need to give some content so people, you know, don't complain. Mm-hmm. So they want longer form content. So there's definitely an art to selecting mm-hmm. you know, the syndicated content that makes sense.
And everything you do is full screen, right?
Yes. Fortunately, people can put it in zones. We don't control what they can do with their software, but we design everything to be full screen. You know, we've done some things with weather where they can be, you know, current conditions or something up in a zone. But we're big proponents of full screen. You just get so much better of impact. That's what I enjoy watching. So everything we do, we kind of gut check ourselves. Is that something I'd want to look at?
I still see tickers here and there, but I don't seem to see as many tickers and scrolling things and all that. Is it starting to go away?
It is. And when we first got into this, that was our biggest thing. And we had a mantra called kill the ticker. We thought about running ads on your blog, actually, mm-hmm. that was an animated piece that was, you know, the killing the ticker with, you know, various ways the ticker would die, blood everywhere.
Tickers must die.
Yes. So, you know, you see it on television still and everything, but yeah, it loses impact. But yeah, thankfully, we're hearing more and more that our customers are a lot smarter than they were when we started, and they're doing less zones, or if they're doing zones, there's some sort of reason where they have a queue system in one zone that needs to be up, and that makes some sense. But thankfully, we're seeing...
Is that mostly a function of experience? They've done it and realized, or just looked around and realized, hey, there's maybe we should kind of calm our screens down?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to be honest, I think the reason it's taken so long to kill them is, no offense to my content management system partners, but they pitched it as a feature so greatly on their systems that's usually their first contact is that CMS system. So I just kind of thought, hey, this is what we do. Mm-hmm. And we get people all the time calling us up saying, hey, we just need something for our ticker. And we try to reconvince them to do something full screen. So
yeah, I see that all the time. And I think it is a function of so many content management systems have very similar capabilities. So one of the ways you try to sell against each other is, look at all the stuff we can do on a screen at once.
Right.
And the end user doesn't know any better if they're new to the game. And they'll say, oh, well, I could do that too. That must be how this is done.
Yeah.
So you're also getting beyond news, weather, sports, and all that stuff, and starting to get in almost like functionality things like flight departure screens and other stuff?
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
And why is that? Why are you going that way?
Yeah, well, we've kind of had a roadmap for a long time that there's always, we call them apps, mm-hmm. and we think like flight information boards we hadn't gotten into, and recently just had reasons to make that a priority, so we built out flight information.
It was customer driven, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. We, for some reason, we had our blindfolds on, and we didn't believe that there was that many locations that would need it. I'm like, well, mm-hmm. the airports, they probably have access to that data. You know, you could look it up on your phone, so we know why do it. But once we did do it for that customer and launched it, you know, at DSC this past year, that was one of the most asked for pieces of content. So, and what we realized with that was people are going to, a lot of times, just have that up on screen all the time. Mm-hmm. And we're delivering content via HTML. You know, so we had some people ask us, well, can I just pop this up in a web browser and have it sit there? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the benefit to them is they don't need, you know, the monthly content management software fee. And so there's an angle there. And to be honest, Chromebox are a good way of making that happen, where we have to look at, do we make a Google Play app that someone can just go to the Google Store, download that app and play mm-hmm. it, and then they don't have that content management fee. But certainly, you know, the role for our, you know, CMS partners, and we like them a lot, but they'll have the device management options. So we've seen that with a few more, you know, Chrome's got their own device management mm-hmm. system. Signage Live is selling theirs as a, hey, we've got just a device management license that's less than their full CMS. Mm-hmm. A OneLAN, same thing. So there's an opportunity there for us and others to create apps that run on screens, and you need nothing more than a device management system to
That's
make sure those things are on. So flight information boards are one, social media apps. There's probably some touch-enabled apps that we can create via HTML mm-hmm. as well. So those are things that are certainly on our roadmap.
What are the verticals that seem to be the best for you guys in terms of, like, is it corporate?
Yeah.
Retail, whatever.
Well, when we launched, that's, you know, it was the convenience store dream of people throwing up screens and selling mm-hmm. advertisements. So literally we did not a lot of big business, but a lot of business, just number of customers.
And some of them even paid you?
Oh, yeah, for a little while until they went under. But yeah. And literally, it was funny because that went on for about 3 years. And what was a wonderful opportunity from us is we're content management independent, really vertical independent, so we see a lot of networks, and we see if they grow because they pay per license, and so we can understand their business models and, you know what's happening. And with none of those, we have scaled pricing, so it gets cheaper as you grow. But those that started dozen, two dozen, they never turned into hundreds. You know, of mm-hmm. course, they'd always tell us we're going to be in thousands. We never saw one of them grow. And so even though we kind of kept picking up more and yeah. more of these, you know, dozen or so, we realized that that wasn't going to be a growth. And what has worked for us is banks are big. You know, we're in 15,000 banks.
Really?
Yeah. And wow. that's big. And then healthcare, I jokingly tell people that's more the healthiest vertical to be in. When I talk to AV integrators mm-hmm. and they're saying they're focusing on health or CMS companies, I encourage them to do so because they have budgets, they pay, and for us, they generally have lobbies where they've got people waiting, and so mm-hmm. that's a good time to keep people entertained. So health is big, but the biggest growth area for us now is corporate communications. I've said this to a number of people, I've told you, but you know, the purpose of corporate communication screens aren't to give people updated information about local events in their area. But if you're got employee messages to get across, again, what's going to get them to teach them to look at that screen? And if that employee message doesn't change often,
yeah.
which hopefully it is, if you've got the resources and the budget, you can fill that playlist and you don't need screen feed. But if you do mm-hmm. need something to keep it updated, and a lot of corporate communications do, or they want to show their stock price or their competitor stock price, or mm-hmm. There's a lot of valid uses. And so corporate communications is our biggest growth area.
It's interesting. I'm hearing that a lot from people, that corporate comms is just something that's really taken off in the last year or so.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of legs. Like, there's a lot of offices.
It's true. And I think I wasn't interested in it because I thought it was boring, you know. Mm-hmm. What I like about content is the opportunity for innovation is I think there's more opportunity with content innovation than, you know, if I was a CMS company. I mean, there's only so much you can do. There's only so much you can do with a screen, mm-hmm. even though I'm wowed with what they do with screens or with systems. But, you know, to try and make corporate communications effective and interesting, that's a good challenge. And I think if you do it well, people see that and recognize it. So we've started building products for it, and we've got a lot to go with mm-hmm. it. But yeah, hopefully it becomes an effective medium that these companies are finding that it's improving their communication and keep reinvesting, because for the whole industry as a whole, that's a wealth of new potential customers.
So you've become a power user. Your company's become a power user of HTML5.
Right.
Is it done? Is it matured? Is it where it needs to be? I realize the standard is kind of locked in now, but it's still evolving in other ways, right? Does it still have a ways to go? Or are you happy with what you can do with it?
Yeah. So I got into the web back in 96, you know, so Flash, I kind of grew up with it. And, you know, I'm hiring all these young buck developers, and, you know, who all learned that Flash was terrible. So jokingly, I always defend Flash within our office. And I do it only because just as much as
nobody else will.
Animated GIFs or anything like that. And it's not that I think it's the future, but I think, hey, what's effective and what mm-hmm. what creates a visual? You know, and for a long time, that created a better visual. Mm-hmm. And as HTML5 matured, it finally got to the point where I'm like, okay, that I saw some things that have been done, some of the things that my guys have done and gals have done, and it's amazing what it can do and how far it's come. Now the current problem, now Flash is in the past, it's going away, but we have a customer that just moved off of Flash. They let us know a week ahead of time. We had mm-hmm. a number of, these are large retail locations that are playing content in Flash, and they've moving to HTML, but their CMS solution is, yeah, okay, so previously we had downloaded all this content down to the player and the Flash template would just display it. So if internet was down, it could still display it. And mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, it was a beautiful animation, looked like video. And now that they have new players that support HTML, the support for HTML is simply to display a remote web page. So it can't store anything, can't cache it.
Right.
A lot of what we were doing before just can't work. Mm-hmm. And the other issue, to answer your question, HTML5 has definitely arrived and it's ready.
Yeah.
The problem we're finding, because we work with so many different types of software solutions or media players, I should say, everyone wants to buy the cheapest media player as possible, which I understand why, but then they ask it to power these amazing
right.
things. And one of the big knocks on Flash before was battery life on laptops. That's why they stopped installing it into Mac laptops many years ago. But HTML5, when you do creative, amazing animations, it eats up processing power and mm-hmm. battery. And so we're finding difficulty. We have amazing developers and we can make something work. Mm-hmm. But if you want to do something really animated, particularly, for example, we created this thing called Sports Central, and it's, I won't get into the whole details of the amazing product itself, but we had a motion graphics guy design it and we didn't want to have any limitations. Let's say, hey, HTML5, we can do anything. So we built it with HTML, JavaScript, and CSS, mm-hmm. and we just could not create the animation to make it look like it was video. So we moved to kind of platform, Canvas platform,
yeah.
which is a lot of what some game developers might use, where it actually draws all the objects using mm-hmm. JavaScript. And we're able to do amazing things. But because we're able to do pretty powerful things, some of the players aren't keeping up. And so it's like that balance. Okay, well, now we got to, just like in the web where we had to work to the browser, okay, this has got to work in Internet mm-hmm. Explorer, this has got to work in Safari. We're like, okay, this has got to work in this software system, this has got to work on this player. And we're learning to add, you know, code into our HTML that adapts to the
yeah.
player itself. So I just, HTML5 is there, but, you know, as uh-huh. an industry, we've got a little ways to go to.
And when there's an issue, the hardware guys say, well, it's not us, it's ScreenFeed's code.
It's true. And in the clients in the middle saying, they don't know which
it.
One to solve. So, but I mean, to say that, we've had a lot of success with HTML5, but I'm just saying has it arrived? And I'm just saying as an industry, we've got to do a little bit better, because there's a lot of features with it, such as the caching, being able to use the caching features in HTML5 where mm-hmm. we can essentially use local storage, but hardly anyone supports that. I'm
yeah.
unfamiliar of anybody that, well, maybe one after talking to someone today. So
you've been doing this stuff now for a number of years. You've kind of watched the industry grow up and mature. What's your point of view on where the signage industry is at right now, where it's going.
Yeah, our company has grown up with the industry, and I'm pretty excited. To be honest, you know, when we started 2008, around 2013, I was thinking, you know, where's this going? The ad model wasn't working. Everyone thought that was going to drive growth. And I thought, are we going to flatline here? And there were some signs that was happening. But to be honest, it's almost like I started the web in 96, and then there was this whole concept, maybe early 2000s, of web 2.0, you know? Mm. And that's, I call it the second try. Everyone kind of going back at e-commerce and saying, okay, they learned from their mistakes, and the web just took off, you know? And I think that's where we're at in digital signage. It's like digital signage 2.0, even though those been around a long time probably say it's digital signage 10.0. Mm-hmm. But to me, there's a maturity in on the customer's end of what they're looking to do. The software technology is not the barrier. The cost of screens isn't the barrier as much anymore. So it's not so much the costs are as much of a barrier. It's now just the business case.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fun spot to be at, because when you got people focusing more on solutions and trying different things and innovating, there's so many more uses. And like I said, I'm happy to be on the content side, because it's only limit is your creativity. And we've got all this. I just look at it as a canvas to work on. So,
all right, Jeremy, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Enjoy the podcast.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9.net every day, and subscribe to this podcast as I stick my shiny new Tascam recorder in the faces of more industry people in the coming weeks. Thanks again for listening. 16.9, the blog, and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. I'm Dave Haynes.